Hello, my name's Jonathan Crewe, and I'm the writer and director of Entangled. I'm joined by a scientist whose documentaries on atoms and quantum physics were a major inspiration to me when writing the play. He's kindly agreed to help shed some light on the theories and ideas that were touched on in the story. So it is my pleasure to welcome, from the University of Surrey, Professor Jim Al-Khalili, and thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
Well, I'd like to start with one of the ideas that everyone seems to know about in quantum physics, which is Schrödinger's cat. Everyone seems to know, even one of the actors in our play turned up with a Schrödinger's cat t-shirt on when we were recording. So I was wondering maybe we could start here. You could tell us a little bit about what Schrödinger's cat experiment is, what it means to quantum physics, and what does it tell us about the physical world?
Okay, well, Schrödinger's cat, I think we should say from the beginning, never really existed. This was what's called a thought experiment in the mind of the Austrian physicist Erwin Schrödinger, one of the founding fathers of quantum mechanics. Now, quantum mechanics is so weird, so counterintuitive, that even one of the originators of the theory itself, Schrödinger, had his doubts. So he came up with this notion that in the quantum world, things can exist in two states or more at once, superposition. And he said, well, if atoms can be in two places at once or have two energies at the same time or be spinning in opposite directions at the same time, then how about larger objects that are also made of atoms? He said, what if you put a cat in a box and with some poison, which is triggered by a quantum event that has a 50-50 chance of happening, then until you open the box, the cat is both dead and alive because that radioactive material has both released and not released the poison at the same time. He said, if it happens for atoms, where's that dividing line between the quantum world, the atomic, the subatomic world, and the world of everyday objects of people and cats and so on? So he says, only with the action of opening the box and carrying out a measurement, observing the state of the cat, do you force it to make up its mind to be either dead or alive? Because we never see cats that are dead and alive at the same time. Yeah. And it was a paradox. These days, we don't see it as such. These days, we say that those quantum weirdness, those ideas that really are limited to the quantum world, don't leak out into the world made up of trillions and trillions of atoms. That quantum coherence is lost between there and here. And it's a moving boundary. But atoms, cats are never dead and alive at the same time. They're one or the other.
Okay, so picking up on one of the things you pointed out is this idea of measurement. That measurement, I think you said, forces the superposition to collapse into some one state. So when we measure it, we know if the cat's dead or the cat's alive. So the measurement has a direct impact on the superposition, has a direct impact on the object. So what actually happens when we make this measurement?
Well, I think the honest answer is no one really knows for sure. Quantum mechanics is a beautiful, elaborate, precise mathematical framework that describes the behavior of atoms and the particle makeup of atoms very, very accurately, and it helps us understand the world around us. But how you then transfer that to what we see when we carry out experiments, make observations, is not part of the theory. You solve the equations of quantum mechanics, and then you say, and then something happens, and we make a measurement. So the measurement problem is one of the outstanding problems in quantum mechanics, but certainly the act of observing a quantum event or quantum process or quantum particle alters its nature, alters its behavior. It ceases to behave quantum mechanically and adopts a sensible outcome, something that we are used to. So particles that can be in two places at once, when you make a measurement, you find them in one place or the other. But before you looked, they weren't one place or the other. We know that for sure. They were actually inhabiting all places.
Okay, so to some extent, there is a gap in our knowledge about what's actually occurring when the measurement takes place, with that time of measurement. So I guess one of the things the play looks at is different interpretations of this. And one of the interpretations about what could be happening at this time of observation is the idea of the many worlds interpretation, which, like I said, was mentioned in the play. So could you tell us a little bit more about the many worlds interpretation?
Yes, I think in its current form, it's also known as the multiverse interpretation. That's the sort of the more modern term. The many worlds interpretation goes back to the early 1950s. An American physicist by the name of Hugh Everett III came up with it. And it's one of the half a dozen or so acknowledged interpretations of explanations of the weirdness of quantum mechanics. And it says that rather than a particle being in two places at once or going in two directions at once, the entire universe splits, branches out into two realities. In one reality, the particle goes one way, in the other reality, it goes the other way. And what we see, what we call quantum interference, is the two universes overlapping. And so if you think of things like Schrodinger's cat, well, when we open the box, what we're doing is not forcing the cat to make up its mind for the quantum state to collapse. What we're doing is splitting the universe into two realities. We see the cat as alive, but there'll be another us in a parallel universe that sees the cat as dead. So it explains the weirdness of quantum mechanics, but at this huge price, that you have to buy into the notion that there's an infinite number of parallel universes.
So I'm assuming then there's no way to actually test this. There's no way to be able to know if this is true or not.
So far there isn't. We have, it's a cool idea. It explains away the weirdness of quantum mechanics. There are some proponents of the multiverse interpretation that say, yes, there is a way of testing it. But by and large, most quantum physicists will say no. All these interpretations explain quantum mechanics, or explain the given interpretation to the mathematics, but we have not yet found a way of discriminating between these different interpretations. So it almost becomes philosophy rather than science, almost religious faith. which interpretation do you buy into? Because it doesn't matter. None of them give any different predictions for any experiment we've been able to devise so far.
So let's go back to this idea about measurement and the fact that it's interconnected with the outcome of any kind of experiment you're doing in any kind of state which a superposition might collapse into. Now, in the play, the machine that they build actually turns off this principle of measurement having a direct impact on the outcome. Do you think that this would ever be possible in the future, or if an experiment could be constructed where you might actually be able to do this? So in essence, to be able to kind of see the superposition and therefore control in which state it collapsed into?
I think until recent years, the answer would have been definitely no. You can't cheat nature. You can't cheat Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, the fuzziness of the quantum world. You know, the more you home in on a particular aspect or property of, say, a quantum particle like an electron, the more you have to give up on other information. So you can never know where it is and how fast it's moving at the same time. But in recent years, there's a new idea that's been developed called weak measurements. And that is the idea that you may be able to gain information from a measurement of a quantum system by probing it very weakly. You don't disturb it much. Now, the less you disturb it, the less information you can gain from it. But if you do that many, many times, each time you're only disturbing it by a tiny amount, then cumulatively you can gain information about the quantum state without actually having done the damage that an all-in-one measurement would have done. Now, weak measurement is still a new idea. And to be perfectly honest, I, along with most quantum physicists, are still trying to get our heads around the implications of it. But it does suggest we might be able to cheat the quantum world.
Okay, well, that was actually going to be my next question. What do you think might be the practical application of this kind of possibility of being able to, like you say, cheat the quantum world?
I'm currently thinking about writing a science fiction novel. And I've got some ideas. Now, I don't want to give away some of these ideas on this program. But I've got one of the big advances that we hope to make in quantum mechanics, quantum 2.0, in the coming decade or two, is to build a quantum computer. And one of the implications of quantum computers is that they will be able to carry out certain tricks that we can't do with a current computer, such as cracking codes, security codes online. So, you know, if a quantum computer is invented, don't put your credit card details on the internet because it is able to factorize large numbers very quickly. But then you can encrypt your information using quantum trickery. So you can actually carry out what's called quantum cryptography, whereby the information is locked down, and any observer who wants to eavesdrop and crack that code by the act of measurement, alerts you that they are eavesdropping. So quantum cryptography is a way of securing your data, not the way we do it now, public key encryption, the factorization of large numbers, but using the tricks of quantum mechanics. Weak measurement would be possibly, certainly something I hypothesize in this novel, sci-fi novel that's running around in my head now. Weak measurement might be a way of even cracking quantum cryptography, because you are eavesdropping very, very gently, very, very subtly, without alerting anyone that you are making this measurement. So it might be a way of cracking quantum encryption. So this is quantum computing will crack current encryption techniques. Quantum cryptography will give us a new, supposedly secure way of encrypting. Weak measurements might even put that in jeopardy. But this is all still speculation for now.
Okay, well, you heard it here first about the new novel by Professor Jim O'Kelly. Okay, I'd love to actually talk a bit more about that, because it's fascinating. In fact, I think Matt Elliott, who was the science advisor on the play, is actually working in the idea of theories behind quantum computing and quantum processing. So I think that's his angle. And so we discussed this idea a lot about this. But what I'd like to do is get back to the play. And one of the other theories that came up in the play was the idea of entanglement. Now, as far as I understand this, is when a measurement takes place, it might not only influence the particle you're measuring, but could also have an influence on a particle which is in somehow connected, linked, or entangled with it. Could you explain a little bit about entanglement, how this works?
Entanglement is probably the most counterintuitive idea in quantum mechanics. We're sort of, we can get our heads around, albeit mathematically, the notion that a single particle can be in a superposition, in a multitude of different states simultaneously. Very often we talk about a particle existing in two spatial positions at the same time. It's here and there until you look, and then it's one place or the other. Or Schrodinger's cat, dead and alive. But what we certainly see in the quantum world, and this is something for me as a nuclear physicist, I'm very used to, is that pairs of particles which may have been in the same place originally, but then are separated, still maintain this connection. Their fates remain intertwined. And so you have to describe them by a single quantum state. They don't behave independently in a way that we don't see in our everyday world. And so inevitably, when you make a measurement on one particle, not only do you force it to make up its mind, where it is, instantaneously the other one has to also change its state, because their quantum state is one and the same. Now, this is so counterintuitive that even Einstein hated it. This is what he called spooky action at a distance. He said, how can a particle over here instantaneously, zero time, affect a particle over there? And over there could in principle be the other side of the galaxy. Einstein's lesson to us is that nothing can travel faster than light. And so this notion that you can instantaneously have particles communicating would seem to violate relativity. And no physicists have really got their head around this and understood this logically. We call it a non-local effect. Usually the way physicists deal with it is to say, well, that quantum state is all wrapped up in the maths. It's not a real signal that's traveling through space. These particles, in a sense, don't really have a solid existence until you measure. Only by the act of measurement do you force them to come into existence in a particular state. But nevertheless, you are forcing a distant object to adopt a state that it didn't have before. The example people would often use is, imagine two gloves, left-hand and right-handed glove, put them in a box, each in a box, and separate the boxes. Now, when you don't know whether the glove that you have is left or right-handed, but you know if you open your box and you find the right-handed glove, instantaneously, you know that the other box contains the left-handed glove. Well, this is not what quantum entanglement is about. Quantum entanglement is much more difficult than that, because it says both gloves are left and right-handed gloves at the same time until you open one of the boxes. It's not that you're just your ignorance of the state that is resolved when you open the box. They really don't have a definite existence until you make a measurement on one. And quantum entanglement, we see it all the time in the quantum world. And we need it to explain all sorts of phenomena that that we're sort of familiar with, certainly in nuclear and particle physics. So we get used to it, but it doesn't make us any happier.
Okay. Well, it's certainly the limits of what I can understand about quantum mechanics as a playwright. I suppose the last thing I'm going to ask you is a very speculative question, and it's something which the play speculates about, which is the idea of knowing that entanglement exists over space, if there is the possibility that quantum entanglement could also happen over time, being that space and time are not necessarily separate entities or factors. Now, I know that there have been some papers released, I think from the University of Queensland in Australia, have theorized about this. Now, I tried to look at these papers and didn't get past the abstract, but maybe do you think there is this possibility of quantum entanglement in time? Is it feasible? Could it happen? Could it exist? Or is it just another theory which doesn't hold water?
It could exist. I mean, in fact, one of the interpretations of quantum mechanics is called the transactional interpretation, which is really all about making a measurement now and affecting the state of that quantum system in the past. So backward causation. Again, that's weird, but then every interpretation of quantum mechanics is weird somewhere. But the notion that entanglement goes across time as well as space is speculative because, yes, space and time are intertwined, according to Einstein's theory of relativity, but we haven't yet got a proper relativistic theory of quantum mechanics. In fact, that's one of the sort of the big goals in modern physics. The Holy Grail is to unify quantum mechanics with the general theory of relativity, Einstein's theory of gravity. So yes, there are versions where space and time get mixed up in quantum mechanics, but in quantum mechanics, time is almost like Newton's version of time. It's this absolute thing that's the clock that ticks by the seconds, the minutes, and the hours independently of things happening in space. It's a parameter, we say, in the quantum equations. Einstein said time isn't. Time is mixed up with space. It's the fourth dimension of space-time. So we're not there yet. And I think that doesn't mean that it's not possible. We're still waiting for a proper theory of space-time to be applied to quantum mechanics. I haven't read that paper by the Queensland physicist, and I suspect I may well struggle as well with it. But who knows? I mean, I think the lesson is that we don't have all the answers yet. There's still mysteries to be solved.
Okay, well, I think that sounds like about the best time to end this before we get even more confused by the mysteries. I'd just like to say thank you very much, Jim Alcleary, for joining us and hopefully shedding light on some of the things which came up in the play. So thank you very much again.
I'm very, very welcome.